It turns out digital world-class performers have a clear strategic value lever for the entire business. Our research revealed that companies with at least one digital world-class business services function, so finance, HR, IT, procurement, actually realize a financial performance premium across several key performance metrics, including ones near and dear to the heart of our CFOs: net margin, EBITDA margin, return on equity, and shareholder return. It's this kind of value that we as practitioners have been hoping for over the last 20 years, and finance now has a chance to transform and make an impact at the enterprise level.
Welcome to the Hackett Group's Business Acceleration Podcast. Week after week, you'll hear from top experts on how to avoid obstacles, manage detours, and celebrate milestones on the journey to world-class performance.
Hi, my name is Gerhard Urbasch. I'm an associate principal in the finance transformation practice at the Hackett Group. The Hackett Group has published a series of thought pieces around digital acceleration. Today, I'll be talking to Jim O'Connor, principal and leader of the Hackett Group's North American advisory practice on digital world-class finance. As always, a full transcript of this episode can be found at podcast.thehackettgroup.com. Welcome, Jim, and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to be here and looking forward to a great conversation.
Technology innovation and digital transformation accelerated during 2020, hastening the shift toward a digital business operating model that has been building for years. As companies make this transition, traditional measures of top performance seem to no longer reflect what is truly possible. Jim, could you shed some insight on what the new measures of top performance are?
Sure, I'd love to. The performance bar certainly has gone up due to digital transformation. At the Hackett Group, we refer today's top level of finance performance as digital world class. It reflects the new performance potential in a highly technology-enabled operation. Fact is, we've noticed this for a few years. We've been tracking it. We've even unveiled digital world-class projections for those of you that have been at our conferences. This year, we sat down and we got to work and adjusted our methodology to incorporate additional benchmarks to get an empirical view of performance. Our results confirm the reality that the bar has changed. To give you an idea, a few stats: in 2021, digital world-class finance operates at 43% lower cost than a typical finance organization. That's about 11% lower than our old world-class organizations. We think there's even a bigger gap ahead over the coming years as organizations more aggressively pursue digital transformation. Now, before we go deeper, I want to ask you, what have you seen as a finance transformation practitioner? Can you recap briefly why you feel digital is more important today to organizations than perhaps in the past?
Sure, Jim. 2020 was certainly a wake-up call for us all. Out of sheer necessity, companies had to make massive changes in weeks, sometimes days, that otherwise would have taken months to plan and execute, really. The experience of 2020 changed mindsets about digital transformation in important ways. It underscored the importance of speed to value, really, as a real measure of change. It redefined the growth rate of technology adoption, and it reinforced the importance of a deliberate technology investment strategy. The past year established a new perspective about enduring change as we transition to the new normal. To give you an idea, 73% of respondents to the Hackett Group's 2021 Key Issues study expect an acceleration of digital innovation to be a permanent characteristic of the business environment, and 72% expect an enduring shift to digital delivery channels. So digital world class, to your point, Jim, really is the North Star in this environment. Let me ask you back. You touched a bit on efficiency already, Jim. Would you say that digital world-class organizations are just better performers in terms of cost, or is there more?
Well, as you know, finance loves cost, but there is certainly more. Digital world-class organizations are leaner, better, and faster. We're getting ready to see the Olympics coming up soon, and that's how you could kind of think of a digital world-class company. It goes beyond cost, and it gets to higher digital automation levels. They're able to deliver improved value through customer experience and what we call digital business enablement. a few examples. Think about more advanced analytics or more time to spend on analysis. Digital world-class companies have 2 times more than peers. Or if you think about digital finance organizations are 39% more likely than peers to be perceived as agile. And that really lines up to our 2021 key issues, where being a business partner was one of their highest goals. Agility might sound nebulous, but it is a sought-after capability. It's real, and I hear it from CFOs all the time. To quote Jeff Bezos, the only sustainable advantage you have over others is agility, and finance organizations are no different.
Thank you, Jim. You talked about some of the immediate benefits of operating at digital world-class levels of performance to finance organizations. Are there any broader business value implications, perhaps even from a shareholder value perspective?
As I just highlighted, organizations are definitely more interested in the strategic advantages of analytics and agility, and our metrics bear that out. So when we saw those metrics come through our analysis, we wanted to dig a little bit deeper. So we looked outside the metrics just for finance, and we explored the external performance of digital world-class companies. It turns out digital world-class performers have a clear strategic value lever for the entire business. Our research revealed that companies with at least one digital world-class business services function, so finance, HR, IT, procurement, actually realize a financial performance premium across several key performance metrics, including ones near and dear to the heart of our CFOs: net margin, EBITDA margin, return on equity, and shareholder return. It's this kind of value that we as practitioners have been hoping for over the last 20 years, and finance now has a chance to transform and make an impact at the enterprise level.
What should finance leaders do to lead their organizations to digital world-class? And what are characteristics that digital world-class organizations have in common, Jim?
Well, it might sound obvious, but they have to focus on digital acceleration and build on the momentum that's been created over the last few years and put into motion a plan to close that gap to digital world class. As a caution, I really believe strongly they should start with strategy, their goals, the company's goals, and recognize it takes a little bit more than technology. We will talk about the practical specifics of getting to digital world class and how to get there and the 6 key characteristics that they can look for. And we've outlined those in this paper. I'll just hit a few of those and we can pick them apart over the course of this conversation. But technology enablement, data and analytics, a cloud-based modern architecture, operating model evolution, end-to-end process design, and last but not least, talent.
Before we go into the characteristics you just described, Jim, let's talk a bit more about digital world-class in comparison with traditional world-class in finance.
Sure. As you know, at Hackett, we've been measuring performance a while. So I always say it, I think it was Plato, but mutual understanding begins with the definition of terms. So let me start with world-class. World-class finance functions are those that achieve upper quartile performance in both efficiency and effectiveness. That usually constitutes about 10 to 15% of the total population of our database. So it's a pretty elite group. Typical practices with world-class performance are well-known best practices: standardization for process, data standardization, automation of processes, adoption of a global business services model, end-to-end process that I just mentioned, as well as extending that to global process ownership. The peer-to-world-class performance gap is largely explained by differences in adoption levels of these best practices, of the company's ability to execute transformation successfully, and of process automation levels.
That's very helpful, Jim. What would be the difference between world-class and digital world-class?
Right. Well, we obviously put a lot of thought into that in our research. And so to reflect the structural changes associated with digital transformation and technology innovation of the finance function, we updated our methodology and we redefined top performance. The main changes we made were we explicitly put in measures for stakeholder experience, digital business enablement, and digital process automation, which I alluded to earlier. And we factored this into our overall algorithm that determines digital world class. As a result, We now identify companies that were truly digital world-class, infusing those measures into the overall methodology. And that comprises about 10%, or the top decile, you could think of it, as our overall population of the database.
Understood. Thank you, Jim. How do world-class and digital world-class compare numerically? Is there any trend that you could share with our audience, Jim?
Sure. We've been tracking this. I've actually been here at Hackett for over a decade, so I can talk personally about it as well. But over the past decade, the peer-to-world-class cost gap, it's narrowed. World-class finance organizations kind of flattened out on their cost structure while peers caught up. Looking at it, we found peers were catching up about 2.7% per year on average. So just think about 3%, they were catching up. Digital world-class finance organizations, they've found a way to extend that cost, and they're 11% lower cost than what a world-class finance organization would be. And that's evidence of the gap that we see, and we think there's more to come. As finance automates more work through digital transformation, the opportunities to improve efficiency will continue. Yet we expect the focus to become, how do I reallocate these activities across the operating model so I can not just improve performance and cost, but overall business value? Our analysis shows that most organizations are still, unfortunately, far removed from digital world-class performance. But this is an opportunity, not just for world-class companies, but for peer companies as well to leapfrog.
How does digital world-class performance compare to peer performance in terms of efficiency, effectiveness, and experience?
I may have to pull out some notes on this. There's a lot of data I can share here. But the three E's is a great way to think about performance. I actually have a client I'm working with right now that their entire GBS they measure by looking at the three E's. So let's roll with that framework and let me pick out a few statistics that will be informative. From an efficiency point of view, they just operate more efficiently. They operate at a lower cost. I'll give you a few stats. Digital world-class finance organizations employ 47% less FTEs than peers per $1 billion in revenue. The gap is even greater for transaction processing, as you might suspect. They've went after that and automated it. So with 61% fewer FTEs, enabling them to deliver finance operations at a 62% lower cost. So that's efficient. Effectiveness, as we mentioned before, that's really where people want to get as well. But that reflects the impact of reinvesting some of those savings into knowledge-centric work. A few to consider would be, digital world-class organizations have a higher percentage of total staff in FP&A, right? Finance, planning, and analysis, that's where you're going to get some of your value. And a favorite of mine is their analysts spend 47% more time analyzing data versus aggregating it. That is powerful. I have a client, Sophia, who runs their FP&A organization, and we use that singular metric as a KPI, as a rallying cry, to try to get her team to improve the amount of time that they can analyze and increase their business value. There's many more. One interesting and effective example is technology spend. Digital world-class finance organizations spend a substantially larger component of their operating budget on technology, and that says something about where their priorities are. I'll hit experience real quick so we can move on. But when it comes to experience, there's differentiation, but honestly, there's still work to do. Our research shows that digital world-class organizations have a performance edge over peers for sure. And a couple stats that are interesting is they actually get higher net performance scores overall from their stakeholders. I was recently working with our research person, and we were looking at stakeholder surveys, and we were happy to see that distinguishment. They also are more likely to provide commercially appropriate advice to their business partners, which gets directly at the desire for business value and better customer experience. Those are meaningful advantages and should compel organizations to consider, how do I more aggressively go after a digital transformation? All that said, a very significant expectation gap still exists, as I mentioned, even for digital world-class finance organizations. 45% of companies do not currently view finances as a valued business partner. So there's work to do, and that's probably one of the biggest areas we're working with the best organizations on.
Let's shift the conversation a bit toward understanding the sources of digital world-class performance, if I may. What role does technology play as a source of performance specifically?
Well, as I mentioned, there's a big cost advantage, right? 43% cost advantage, 47% productivity advantage. But certainly technology and the digital revolution explains a significant share of the world-class performance edge. They're rationalizing their legacy technology environment, and they're continuing to take that landscape, modernizing it, and that explains why they spend 19% less than peers. A minute ago, Jim, you said they spend a greater portion of their budget. They do, but they spend less overall. So let me ask you a question as well. What are some of the technologies you've seen adopted by organizations lately?
I've seen technologies being adopted in practice really around five capabilities, Jim. That is around, number one, we're talking digital engagement. Number two, digital workforce and organization. Number three, digital service optimization. Number four, the digital ecosystem. And number five, analytics-driven insight. Some of the technologies supporting these five capabilities are, and I'll give you a small list here, really are data visualization, natural language generation is becoming more and more important, narrative style reporting, machine learning and predictive analytics, business process management automation, self-service analytics and reporting, RPA, automated integrations between systems and applications, to name just a few which can make a great impact in terms of performance. I'd like to come back, Jim, to what you just said previously. You mentioned there digital world-class organization spend is 19% lower than that of peers. Does that mean that technology spend is not as important to digital world-class organizations?
Good question. On the contrary, it means they spend it better. What we see is that although digital world-class companies spend less on technology as a percent of revenue than their peers, but they have far more technology-intensive operating model. And they spend a larger component of operating costs on digital technology than peers. So 13% versus 9%. And that's meaningful. I have a number of clients that have they've started to steer their digital transformation. Part of the challenge is getting executives to commit to that. And that's a good metric for people to think about is what percent of our technology spend are we spending on digital?
Now, what do digital world-class organizations leverage technology for actually? Or in other words, what's the purpose of their technology spend?
Well, the purpose at the most simplest level is to substitute labor with technology and realize savings from that move. You could think back to when GBSs and people are still doing it. There's the labor arbitrage. Think of this as technology arbitrage. That said, the purpose of technology spend is not just about eliminating labor. It's not just about costs. Leaders, they want to invest to equip their teams with modern digital tools and opportunities to add value, as we talked about earlier. As an example, we have a client who aggressively applied what we call smart automation. Think of that as kind of RPA plus across their operations. As they took hold and they realized capacity savings, they realized there was an opportunity to change people's job. And it really hit me personally because they one of the positions, they had an AP supervisor and they renamed her title to Analytics Wizard. And what she ended up doing was collaborating with supply chain on strategic decisions around cash. So she was improving enterprise value way beyond the cost of that role. And so my point is, you're limited in thinking if you're only thinking swap labor for technology. You'll save costs, but you might miss on the real value proposition if you don't look beyond that.
Thank you, Jim. On the labor substitution element of leveraging technology, which you just mentioned, obviously, what levels of performance have you seen organizations achieve?
Well, the automation efforts, as I mentioned, some of my stats, and you'll see in the paper for those of you that download it, have traditionally focused on transactional processes, right? The easy targets of finance operations, AP, accounting, T&E, other core processes. But they can up that automation quotient, and the function has been able to occasionally eliminate manual intervention, significantly lowering process costs. Digital world-class organizations, they've got a clear lead in transactional over automation, and hopefully they'll start moving beyond that. For example, if you stick to our accounting and AP examples I just gave, they've automated 96% of journal entries versus 77% for peers. They also receive 70% of their supplier vendor invoices electronically versus only 50% from peers. So those are pretty meaningful differences.
That's very impressive indeed, Jim. You mentioned there is an angle of technology spent enhancing value added as well. Could you give a few examples?
This is more mature stuff. And as we discussed, while clients might start on the operations side, as they mature, there's more opportunity. Digital world-class organizations, they've made substantial inroads in automating some of those knowledge processes so they can free up capacity to perform that value-added work. For example, 73% of digital world-class companies provide online access to management reports, and that gives them the ability to run ad hoc reporting and analysis and drive value immediately. The practical implication of that is that they need to look at higher value processes beyond the finance operations. One typical way we help our clients is to examine their finance processes and create heat maps. So we look at what criteria, we work with that client to find out where they have the most opportunity based on what we've seen in best practice, but then also looking at their own specific organization. And it's a great way to challenge yourself, not just to stick to operations, but to go to higher value added processes.
We've spoken extensively now about technology enablement as a source of digital world-class performance advantage, Jim. Are there other areas which are important in terms of supporting the digital world-class performance advantage?
Sure, and I hinted a few of those earlier, but I always tell people digital has not changed a basic transformation truth, right? You have to holistically address multiple components of the service delivery model to be successful. So practically, to fully unlock the potential of digital technology, they need to consider and address those five areas I mentioned earlier: data, cloud, modern architecture, their operating model, and the end-to-end process design and talent.
Could you give us some context as well around data and analytics, the second of the six areas?
Sure. This is a favorite of our clients, and certainly the virus outbreak and its repercussions lent new urgency to how do I forecast and how do I analyze and can I do it quickly? In our latest The Key Issues study, Improving Analytics and Modeling, it was the number three initiative on the agenda and really has been in the top five over the last 10 years that I remember. Sophisticated FP&A teams are embracing new analytic techniques, such as predictive modeling in particular. They spend 2.5 times more employing sensitivity, investment, and value analysis techniques. And I already mentioned about how they have more time to analyze. Imagine if your team had more time and better tools, what your team could do.
Wow, that's a significant digital works class edge indeed. How about the third of the six elements, a cloud-based modern architecture?
Sure. Finance transformation, we continue to integrate retiring legacy systems, adopting emerging technologies, migrating applications to the cloud, and integrating data from disparate sources. It's not an easy work, but modernizing architecture, design, and management are absolutely critical for simplifying the complexity of organizations and reaping those benefits. Just a couple, cloud, to your direct question. You know, our latest key issues, it projects 25% year-over-year growth and adoption of cloud-based finance application suites. Moreover, we found that 57%, so almost 6 of 10 finance executives during the pandemic, they immediately decelerated legacy and they went to more specific and focused cloud and other digital tools. A lot of our clients viewed that as a way to get to value quicker. And our experience is that that is one way to do it. And we've seen the benefits bear out.
Yeah, well, Jim, I see this in almost every project we're doing. Those leading finance organizations really are at the forefront of architecture modernization and cloud migration. They've developed a clear capability ownership within finance via process ownership roles and forged effective partnerships with their internal technology groups, leveraging the deep technical skills required in both the finance and the technology organization. At one client, for example, a CPG company, we're supporting the implementation of a North America operating model. While we're consolidating end-to-end processes, including finance processes, across the US and Canada, we're setting up centers of excellence supported by nearshore global business services and rolling out a new cloud-based ERP system. Process owners, for example, for customer to cash, account to record, source to contract, or a purchase to pay, are playing a critical role in this large-scale digital transformation, and we're working closely with them to accelerate speed to value. The cloud rollout, in other words, really is a key enabler around which entire operating models are newly set up and with the respective value impact.
Wow, thank you for that example. That really brings it home, and our data and our research would bear that out. Finance organizations with large-scale cloud deployments are 32% more likely than peers to meet their enterprise objectives and 44% more likely to meet their finance functional objectives. So that's great to hear.
Now, I'm intrigued by how much more likely finance organizations with large-scale cloud deployments are meeting enterprise and functional objectives. To the fourth element you had mentioned, Jim, it seems that digital world-class organizations think more broadly about their operating models as well. Is that right, Jim?
Indeed, that has been a big focus of work for us as a firm overall. Digital world-class finance organizations have been evolving their operating models really as a matter of necessity. This transition has far-reaching implications for the model, and it's still evolving. But one thing we know is the model is going to shift from a predominantly functionally aligned resources under command and control of the CFO to a hybrid model where it's both functional with a more leaning towards enterprise-aligned resources.
That's interesting. What would be some of the implications from the shift in the operating model?
Well, one key change is the emergence and importance of GBS capabilities will continue, but they're going to move less from labor arbitrage to digital enablement, similar to what I mentioned before. They're creating digital operations, and they're going to fast-track these companies, their digital and technology-enabled aspirations. So in the future state, as the finance organization evolves, it will move from a more rigid hierarchy to a fluid network of resources that are deployed or redeployed to support what the most critical initiatives and high-value activities across the enterprise are. Our analysis showed that finance resource allocation over the coming years is going to shift from about 36% enterprise aligned today to upwards of 65%. Now, that's a forecast, but we're pretty confident that that's a shift that's underway.
Talking about operating models, you mentioned end-to-end process design and ownership as well, I believe, as the fifth area and source of digital world-class advantage. Is that right?
That is right. Process ownership continues to be a key best practice, and digital transformation has enabled it beyond what it was before. The expected pacing of transformation and the deployment of these new capabilities, it underscores the importance of that end-to-end process orientation as well as the end-to-end ownership within finance. It's critical for the function to ensure it has the capabilities designed to deliver the outcomes needed. And customer centricity is where you start with an end-to-end orientation. In our key issues study, the leading impediment to successful transformation was really a process and technology complexity tied. So when a process is executed in a piecemeal fashion versus the ownership, it's not only more expensive, but it undermines the ability to respond quickly to changes in business conditions or stakeholder demands.
What role would dedicated global process owners play in this transformation?
Dedicated process owners, they have to play a key role, and they are critical to high performance. As I mentioned, with the advent of digital and virtual capability, it engenders this role, and it makes it even more important. They oversee and govern the process, the data, and the digital technologies from start to finish. Therefore, they can spot bottlenecks, they can make changes more easily, and they can identify opportunities. An interesting point, 100% of digital world-class organizations have an end-to-end process owner, which kind of floored us a little bit. We were expecting it to be high, but 100% compared to 57% of peers. So reflecting, this is a hot area. I'm actively involved with a number of clients to tweak and adjust their GPO models in enablement further with digital transformation.
The way you describe the role of the global process owners, it seems that even in digital world-class organizations, human talent is still a significant source of advantage.
You are right. It always comes down to this, doesn't it? Talent is the sixth, but it's pretty much everything, and it's intricately linked with the number one priority of finance organizations, which is business partnering. How do you partner if you don't have the best talent? So the macro trend is with many processes becoming more technology and digitally enabled, leading finance organizations, they're rebalancing the resource, as we talked about before, and now they have to improve their ability to use those tools, foresee change, effectively partner, and impact strategic decisions. I mentioned it already, but it's worth bearing out that the digital world-class finance functions have 41% of the total staff in FP&A compared to 28%.
Talking about FP&A, how would you describe the role and skills profile of FP&A leaders in digital world-class organizations, Jim?
Well, it's certainly changed from the days of I know where the data is and I put it in Excel and aren't I important? What we really need are highly skilled business enablement leaders. They're at the core of FP&A. This role requires advanced analytical acumen to drive insight and technical IQ to deliver operational efficiencies through automation, through digitization of work, as well as essentials to business partnering, emotional intelligence, facilitation, relationship management, and an orientation to how to help make change happen. A few nuggets that would support this are 34% more likely than peers to have staff with direct operational experience. So if you think about that, people in finance have been in the business, right? One third, that's important. So beyond finance, those in digital operational roles, they're also going to require these new skills. They're going to learn how to process mine. They're going to be using intelligent automation techniques and customer-oriented service design. A lot of companies are there now, but as we mentioned before, there's still a good road to go.
Thank you, Jim, for taking us through the six sources of digital world-class performance advantage.
Thank you. And if we have time, let me ask you just a few more questions as well as from a practical implementer. You know, you get to go on site and help transform companies day to day. So hopefully this information sharing has convinced a few people to take stock and consider how they want to chart their own journey. And I'm kind of wondering, from your perspective, what's a typical action plan look like? And what would help organizations achieve digital world class?
An action plan for digital world class really has three key steps. Step one is to start with value. Step two is to design future capabilities to advance the digital agenda. And step three is to create the journey map to achieve one's digital world class aspirations.
Makes sense. Starting with value is intriguing. What are some of the elements of step one?
Starting with value means essentially to create a baseline of key performance indicators for current levels of efficiency, effectiveness, and experience, the three E's. It also includes assessing the capabilities and maturity of the current finance operating model, resource allocation, and technology effectiveness based on leading and emerging best practices. Finally, we need to identify and prioritize performance gaps that outline critical focus areas for accelerating digital progress and future business needs.
What would the second step entail? That is, to design future capabilities to advance the digital agenda.
Designing future capabilities would entail developing the future KPIs required to meet business and finance strategic objectives. We define the capabilities needed within the finance organization to support the business strategy, collaborating with other functions to design enterprise-owned capabilities. We create best-fit target finance operating model scenarios to accelerate digital strategies, define the digital tools and analytics needed to enable capabilities, and finally, determine the digital talent and culture needed.
Great. And I think you know what's coming. I'm interested in the third element of the action plan. You mentioned to create a journey map to achieve digital world-class aspirations. Could you give me a little more detail around that as well?
Absolutely, Jim. To get to the journey map, we prioritize desired capabilities based on performance gaps. Then we chart the transformation journey, prioritizing technology-led initiatives. We developed the conceptual design for the transformative execution and digital operations elements of the future finance operating model. And in doing so, we collaborate, obviously, with the internal technology function to map high-level technology enablement adoption. We then consolidate the results on a journey map that outlines investments, benefits, and resources.
You know, if time permitting, it would be great if we could share just a couple examples of clients you have worked with that have made inroads in building their digital capabilities.
Sure, Jim. I've supported an online retailer in digitizing the finance function. We conducted a rapid scan, defined vision and digital maturity gap, sized the opportunity in terms of value for the customer to cash, purchase to pay, and account to report processes. We held workshops with client management and process SMEs identifying automation opportunities and use cases, complementing their existing Oracle capabilities. We described the use cases in terms of functionality, technology options, and expected dollar benefits, defined technology investment priorities, and eventually a new technology roadmap. Let me tell you about another current client as well, a global medical products manufacturer, where we're exploring digital opportunities through account reconciliation, process automation, self-service reporting, master data management, and automation. We're looking at automated reporting, natural language generation reporting, visually attractive dashboards, also predictive forecasting and probabilistic modeling to be used for profitability analysis. We're using scenarios and simulation driving cash flow and capital modeling while driving quick hits over the next 60 to 90 days.
I think giving people a sense of the technologies employed, and certainly I love seeing the word quick hits, as do my clients. So that's super helpful. I'm sure it wasn't easy, though. Are there any lessons learned from these hands-on initiatives when it comes to speed to value?
That's a great question, Jim. What I see is that even technology-savvy organizations, such as the online retailer I just mentioned, do not address digital transformation holistically. It's not companies' core competency, really, to engage in transformation projects. Their core competencies lie in executing the business they're in and, at best, engaging in continuous improvement. That applies even more to digital transformations, as we're dealing with step rather than continuous change. C-suites are therefore well advised to leverage specific digital transformation expertise.
Well, that's a great final comment and a really important lesson for people to consider.
Thank you so much for joining me for this conversation and sharing your valuable insights on achieving finance digital world-class performance.
Well, thank you. It's been my pleasure.
Thanks for listening. You can find the audio, helpful resources, and a transcript of each episode at podcast.thehackitgroup.com. If you liked this episode, please share it. You can also subscribe at Apple Podcasts or your favorite listening app so you never miss an episode. We'd welcome your feedback by tapping the rating on this or any episode, or send us an email at podcast@thehackitgroup.com. The Hackett Group is a global leader in defining and enabling world-class performance. Learn how we can assist with your improvement journey at www.thehackitgroup.com.